Welcome to the Successful Athletes Podcast presented by Trainer Road, where we interview successful athletes to make you a faster cyclist. This week, we are joined by Jessica Brooks out of Fayetteville, Arkansas from the Breakaway Racing Team. How's it going, Jessica?
Hey, Jonathan.
I'm excited to have you doing this. You actually reached out to me. I was following Masters National Championships closely, a few friends' races closely there, and seeing how they were doing. And then you reached out and let me know that you actually won a Masters National Championship in the crit there in the 40 to 44 division. Which is just amazing. I'm stoked to have you on for this.
Super excited to be on. And I was just so excited about that win that, and on a Trainer Road plan, I was like, I got to tell Jonathan.
Yeah, of course. This is awesome. So we're going to get into that and we're going to get into a whole lot more about how you executed on the day, how you prepared for that and go back even years. So let's just start now and provide some context on who you are. So your family and work situation, can you lay that out for us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a mom and a wife, and I actually have two kids. One is older and has moved out. So as it relates to, you know, training and racing bandwidth and family, not as much of a factor, but I do have a 9-year-old daughter, Simone, who I love very much. And so that is always something that I'm working to balance her activities, right? You know, it's kind of like I've got tons of sports ambition, but the older that she gets, I want to make sure that I'm feeding her sports ambition. And so I know that that's a trade-off a lot of parents make as your kids start getting a little bit older, who gets to spend the time following their dreams in sports. And then I'm also, you know, have a very busy career. I am vice president of customer experience at J.B. Hunt. And so that is also something that takes up, you know, obviously a lot of focus and time for me.
Yeah. I have, being a parent, I have so many questions about the parent thing. You brought up I want to talk about that really quick. We're going to take a detour.
Sure.
But when your child starts to have ambitions that, you know, it's hard when you have a 9-year-old child, you can't be like, come join me for this, you know, 2-hour threshold ride that I'm going to do.
Yeah,
you don't want to do that. That's what Child Protective Services is for. So,
and also she has no interest. You know, she's like, mom, that's your thing. She likes soccer.
Okay. Yeah. So cycling is such a time intensive sport to pursue. You know, the 1 hour that you do, if it's a crit race, the 1 hour that you do on the weekend just requires so many hours in the week. And that's probably not dissimilar to anything at the level that you compete at when you're talking about the nationally competitive level, but in and of itself, it's just a very time intensive thing. How do you balance that with especially when your child has ambitions for soccer, which is also time intensive?
Yeah.
How do you prioritize and balance that? Do you struggle with that?
Oh yeah. So let me just first say, I don't just have like some wisdom to sprinkle of like, man, I'm the best mom and the best cyclist and I have this balance figured out. I think certainly I probably do a bad job with those competing priorities. And sometimes one, meaning cycling, probably takes a little bit more priority than it should when I'm looking at it objectively. But, you know, I really try to look at it like a little bit of a bank account. So if I'm taking debits, I need to make sure that I'm also putting in some deposits in terms of just focus and time spent. And, you know, I've heard this talked about on the podcast and I truly agree. It's a lot about just being focused and present where you are. So if it's family time, I'm focused on family time, right? So then when I'm, you know, away and I'm training or whatever, I'm focused on cycling. I'm not always the best at executing on the thing I just said. That's always the goal that I have. And then I really, I'm very lucky with the company that I work for because I am able to get some training work done at lunch. So first of all, I'm not a morning person. So morning workouts are not going to happen. I've done it before. I can do it. I don't like it. I'm just not a morning person. And so the way that my schedule looks is a lot of my structured shorter training is during the week. And usually 2 to 3 days a week, I'm able to get in a lunch ride. So about an hour and 15 minute workout then. So that's a Trainer Road workout, right? Outside workout is usually what I'm doing. And then I will log the longer miles on the weekends. And then all of that is subject to change. And there's just a lot of scheduling gymnastics, you know, as it relates to my calendar at work. You know, I've got meetings all day. So there's just a lot of like, oh, can I get this in here? So I really try to treat at least my two hard workouts during the week as a meet that like they're on my calendar. So I really try not to overschedule those with meetings. And then my daughter's schedule, you know, she's got a couple nights a week of activity. So obviously we're scheduling around that as well. And then, you know, soccer games on Saturdays, when that's in season, it just means my Saturday workouts may be, you know, in the heat of the sun, you know, not ideal in the morning. So it's just a lot of, you know, where can I fit it in? But I really, you know, I just think you have to have the passion to want it. And I do. And so if you want it, you'll fit it in. And that's, you know, what has worked for me. But I do think it requires a pretty high level of motivation and want, because it is a lot of work just trying to figure out how to fit it all in. But that means that I am able to fit in about 8 to 12 hours a week on the bike, and then 2 hours a week in the gym. So those are 2 days, but on the gym, we can, you know, we'll go there as a family. So I'll try to ride at lunch and then do a gym workout in the evening, go with the family, and I'll do my workout sometimes at the kid factory. And then my husband's there working out too. So that kind of, that works.
Awesome. Cool. We're going to get into your training in depth too, a little later, but I want to talk about how you arrived at cycling. You mentioned mm-hmm. you have like a strong sport drive, like you want to have that. And is it sport in and of itself, or is it competition within the arena of sport?
It's both. So I grew up in a small town. The sport options are somewhat limited with that. So when I grew up, we didn't have soccer. You could do cheerleading, gymnastics, or basketball. So I was a cheerleader. I did gymnastics for a little while. And then I just dropped out of sport for a while. And in college started just running, right? Like, oh, I want to get fit. I'm going to run. And liked running. And then I like fitness classes. So I attended a kickboxing class. And I really liked it. And I was kind of like, it'd be fun to control this. So I became a kickboxing instructor. So I taught kickboxing classes for about 10 years. And so that was sort of I ran and taught kickboxing classes. That was sort of what I did in my 20s in terms of athletics. And then I wanted to get into triathlon. So that's when I bought the bike. So it sort of transitioned from teaching kickboxing, triathlete, and training to, wow, it's really hard to train for three sports and be good at them. And I am very competitive. So it is a little bit of sport and hard work, but, competing is fun. And that's just really when I fell in love with cycling. I started doing group rides and, hey, you should do some race, like a road race that you'd be good at it. And so once I started doing a couple of road races, it was like, oh, all the other stuff went out the door. Yeah.
And that's, you went from cat 4 to cat 2 in the space of 2 years.
Yeah.
Within that process, did you do anything to like accelerate that process, or was that just the natural evolution that you upgraded that quickly within that time frame?
I think I got lucky in that I figured out structured training would benefit you fairly early. So, when I started on the bike, it was like, I bet how a lot of people do. I got in on some group rides. There were actually lunch group rides at my company with some pretty fast guys. And I mean, they just dropped me every day. And like, so I got to where I could like keep up with them, but that was it, right? So it was, and it was every day, a really hard group ride, which in hindsight, maybe wasn't the smartest thing. But after, I don't know, 6 months, maybe a year of that, I fell into understanding that, hey, structured training is the way to go if you actually want to really progress. And so I took a winter training class. Sounds like it's kind of similar to what you all talked about Chad's class used to be like. And so took a winter training class and kind of got into structured training from there. And then from there, had a coach. So pretty early on, I was able to do structured training. And then as it relates to catting up, you know, I think I just had fitness and was able to do well, but you know, my teammate and I joke a lot that we didn't really do ourselves any favors getting ourselves to a two pretty quickly, because it's like we got to a two on brute force.
Yeah.
and then we're like, okay, well, you're a two, so now you're going to go do some national races with the P12 Peloton and all of the other things that are very important. If you actually want to be in the race, become very, very important. You can't just hang out in the wind. You can't just latch back on. Like, you know, I would do the just blow watts out, whatever, to get whatever I wanted to do in a race. And in hindsight, I wish I had taken a little bit more time to learn race craft. Mm-hmm. But that is a hard thing as a woman, because the fields aren't that large. So you kind of have to get to that level to get in these big fields to get that race experience. So it's a little bit of a catch 22 there.
Yeah, that's a good point. In many cases, that advice is handed out from men in the context of male races. And,
yep.
And the size of a field absolutely changes how you race it. And
yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that a small field means you can get away with more. That's not necessarily the case. But smaller fields in most cases tend to have less potential outcomes in terms of quantity mm-hmm. of outcome, possible outcome. So yeah. It tends to be more, you just have less experience that you get to build as a result of that, right?
Yeah.
That's just how it goes. Yeah. That would be a frustration point for sure. Was that tough going from like these races where you felt like you were dominant, you felt like you had things figured out, and then that huge step up at the national level?
Oh yeah. I mean, but even catting to a three, I think your first year, you know, the race is on top of you. You're like, what is happening? Like, I'm going to die. what has happened? And you get through the race, you're like, okay, glad that's over. But then, you know, as you get more comfortable, you start being able to read the race and react and be proactive. And yeah, I mean, even as a four and a three, the biggest races I had an opportunity to do. And I, you know, I wasn't traveling around the country to go do Tote or Intelligentsia at that point, which in hindsight, maybe that would have been a better idea, but Tulsa Tough, which is close. Those are some of the biggest races that I was able to do as a four or a three. And you know, I was able to podium in those races, but still, that's not a lot of experience. And then our first year as a two, in 2019, you know, we did Tulsa Tough in the pro field, and that was a whole different experience, you know, racing with 100 people, you just don't get that opportunity as much as a woman.
It's so different, right? When you're racing with that many athletes, what were the things that you learned that made the biggest differences to help you start to actually hang in with those fields rather than feel like, once again, the race is on top of you, like you said?
Yeah. Really the concept of energy conservation. So it's so easy when you have fitness to just use it to do something dumb, like to get caught out in a bad position and you can just use your legs to get back in. Well, you just burnt a match doing that. Or you know, it's more comfortable riding on the outside. Well, that's more work to do that. And so, really starting to be thoughtful about, cornering and conserving energy and cornering, staying within the pack and being smart there, being considerate about chasing down attacks. I mean, in a small field, it's kind of like with your teammates, you're like, well, we'll just take turns chasing attacks. Well, you got to be a little bit more thoughtful than that when you're racing with the country's best, right? Like you just can't go do all of that. And so just really, really being thoughtful about energy conservation and learning to be in a pack, just those race skills and just bikes handling skills in a pack were probably the biggest things. And I by no means feel like I have all that mastered. You know, 2019 was my first year as a two. We did OKC Pro-Am, Tulsa Tough, Intelligentsia, Gateway Cup in St. Louis. But then, That was a lot of learning, but then 2020 was canceled.
Yeah.
So, and then a lot of this year has been too. So I feel like the learning kind of got put on pause a little bit the last year.
Isn't it funny how we tend to feel like when you move up in categories, you almost feel like you start from scratch all again. Mm-hmm. Like I even feel that as a two now on the road. And when you're racing with a proper two field, I have to relearn how to race again. It's just a different set of circumstances brings about a different set of rules, so to speak, in the sense of how, what gets you to success and what doesn't. It's that's kind of the appeal, I guess, of it. One of the appeals.
There's always room. I agree.
Yeah.
And I think just the, giving yourself some grace around, hey, you don't suck. This is just new and the cognitive load is high and, you know, you just need some experience and some repetition in this to start to gain some skill. I think that's a big part of just the mental transition, and that's tough.
Yeah. That's a great pointer right there. I like that. Let's talk about your training. So you've always been somewhat like your cycling experience. You've had structure. You've been familiar with structure the whole time. Mm-hmm. You started using Trainer Road in 2018. Mm-hmm. I think you followed a plan then. And then you just, after that, it was more in an ad hoc manner. You kind of did the go as you train, as you go sort of a thing, picked a workout when it fit and went with the coach thereafter as well. Right.
Yeah.
But then this year in 2021, and through that time period, FTP floated somewhere around like 245 is what you were telling me. And this year, the year that you win a Masters National Championship, which is so exciting, you ended up going from 230s up to 262 with your power, and you strictly adhered to a TR plan. So I personally love this. Check the box to hear that. But what I want to ask you about this process is, what was different about this year to see that sort of pushing past a plateau and to see the sort of improvement that ended up delivering you a national championship? What was different in terms of, you could talk about the work you did, but also there's so many other things I'm sure that you've learned along the way that have helped make this year more successful.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of it is, frankly, the willingness to test more often. And the fact that that was built into Trainer Road, I think helped. I don't think this is on my coach. I could be a little lazy and tend to just let that FTP sit because the workouts, even though they're challenging, they're pretty comfortable. Like I could almost always do any workout with my FTP set right at 245. I think it probably was a little higher at a certain point, you know, in 2019, which is probably my big, like, hey, I built a lot of fitness and did a lot of racing. But this year I just said, all right, well, I'm flying without a coach. So I'm going to really, you know, go with this plan and be true to it. And I've made some modifications depending on how I feel or, kind of leading up to races, but, just really try to test when it said to test, which meant I pulled it down from the 245 that it's been sat at for 2 years. Right. And so had a little bit lower training zones. And then the next test I did, I was like, oh my, like 262, I've never tested that high. And so, you know, that was exciting to bump it that much. And then scary of like, oh man, these workouts are going to be tough. I think just following the plan and, kind of trusting the process and really doing the regular testing and being okay with pulling it down when the plan says to pull it down. I mean, clearly the results of it coming up that much, you know, speak to the value of that.
Yeah. In many cases, when we self-select our FTP, we put it too high. And we hold on to it. We don't put it like way too high, but we put it just kind of where we think it probably is. But in many cases, even then, that's too high. And we would actually get more benefit out of training at a little lower intensity like you did. We see that really commonly. What were the other factors about how you approach your training? You mentioned that you made adjustments. You did that sort of thing. Were you more consistent this year? What were the other game changers this year that made you get more out of your training?
Yeah, I have never had a huge problem with consistency of training. So I would say that was probably pretty standard. I have really focused a lot on sleep. So I have an Aura ring that's a fitness tracker. I'm not a good sleeper. And I've done everything. Like I'm like going back years and years, but I've taken Tylenol PM every day, which is terrible. I've been on prescription sleep medication, which is terrible. Just focused on the fundamentals of just good sleep hygiene, and then found some supplements that worked for me that really helped me get. So like deep sleep, I got none, like 10 minutes, 15 minutes a night when I started tracking it. Now I'm up to over an hour. I think that has really helped. And then the other thing is leading up to races, I probably tapered the workouts a little bit more than what was in the plan. It felt maybe a little bit too hard coming into the race. But I think that's also maybe why the results have been good. You know, the build really is hard. The fatigue starts, and, I also cut the gym a little bit earlier this year. So I try to always do strength training throughout the year, right? I'm 41. Like I need it for bone density. I understand it helps you be strong on the bike. But this year it just felt like the build plus gym work just was a little much. So I just cut the gym work in June. And I'll get back in probably in the next month.
Awesome. And that's, I'm excited for adaptive training for you to use
it. Yeah. Because
then you'll,
I watched my email for a while and then I just gave up, but I'm glad to get on it whenever I can.
We can get you in now. We'll cool. do it. So, because that's just the thing, that adjustment is key. And when you're coming into something that will adjust for you, I think that's super important. And that's also, I think, a myth is that somebody should just turn off their brain and just follow the program. But that's your subjective feedback is so important in the process, mm-hmm. right? And like how you're feeling and learning to listen to your body and do all that is really important. Did you do anything else to improve your sleep? You've mentioned the supplements, but you know, light pollution or temperature, anything else?
Yeah. I'm not like, getting the chili pad and all the Nate sleep protocol. I do a sleep mask, and I like can't live without that. So that blocks out the light. I do have the yellow glasses that I'll wear in the evenings. I try to go to bed and wake up at the same time. I know that's a big piece. So in the past, I've probably tried to cut the sleep a little in the week and then make it up on the weekends, which I don't think that helps. And then I just take magnesium 3 and 8 in the evening. And it is like, that has been the game changer for me on deep sleep, but everyone's different. So that's like what my body needed apparently. And it has really, really helped a lot.
How about nutrition? How do you feel your workouts? It gets particularly hard when you have the work mm-hmm. stress, the family mm-hmm. stress and the crazy schedule. You run a really tight schedule with your training in the middle of the day with work. So what is your nutrition look like in just general terms? And then specifically, when do you time it with your training?
I eat a lot. And that's something
that's commonality right there.
Yes.
Yeah. It's hard. Yeah. Right?
Well, I just, I have done every trend in fat. This is not in the last couple of years. And I honestly think that's what's really helped me the last couple of years. But I do like exercise and nutrition. Like I like to listen to podcasts and read things. And, so I've tried everything, and probably the thing that helped me the most on nutrition is like, don't sweat it and eat a lot of carbs. So, I do fuel the workouts with carbs, and I eat plenty of carbs before and after. And that has helped me a lot. And then I do try to focus on quality. Hit and miss, you know, I'm not eating pizza and Popeyes, but, you know, I'm not always eating as much vegetables as I would like. But I do really, really focus on macros and getting enough protein. The stuff that I do eat, it is, you know, I try to eat organic, try to eat at least if it's processed food, like at least kind of quality processed food, you know, like the chickpea Cheetos instead of the Chester Cheetos.
I
don't know, maybe that's a
marginal gains is what it's called. Marginal gains.
But really, I don't know. I think I probably limited my calorie consumption in the past, and I think that was a huge mistake. And so I found for me just mental health and And my weight has been, you know, I've heard it said like your body knows how to figure it out. If you just fuel properly and focus on your training, your body composition will work out. And I have very much found that to be true. So I really don't sweat. If I'm hungry, I eat. And I just focus on the macros around the workouts and making sure I get enough protein and try to eat fruits and vegetables when I can.
Awesome. Yeah. Have you found anything? So, and we're going to get more into the racing talk here in just a bit. And this kind of leads into it. What have you found to work for such short and intense races as criteriums in terms of fueling on the bike? Do you fuel during the course of a criterium or do you try to pack it all in before and after?
What do you do? Yeah. I will have some carbs in the bottle. And I'll just usually make sure I've had plenty of carbs in the, you know, the day leading up. I'm not like carb loading, but eating plenty. And then we'll usually do caffeine and a gel, you know, before the race. And actually, I've done the run gum before. I like run gum, but it was just like ordering it. You know, it's so here's something. I got a 5-hour energy at a gas station one time, and I actually did it before Masters Nationals in 2019. And I was like, nothing like trying something new before a big national race, but I did. And I felt I liked it. And so 5-hour energy is kind of what I've been doing for my kind of caffeine energy boost before a race. And just like 30 minutes or an hour before the race, I'm doing one of those and then eating a gel just somewhere like in the 30-minute range before the race starts.
Nice.
And then just like some scratch in the bottle. Sometimes I do Cargo Rocket, which is the 3 scoops is 80 or 90 carbs, I think, but not that many scoops in a bottle, maybe 60 carbs.
Right. Yeah. Makes it pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Awesome. Let's talk about, I want to talk about the, like, so you've raced Toad, Tulsa Tough, Joe Martin, like all these premier American road races. How is it different or how do you have to race differently when you race that versus a local road race?
Yeah, the big thing is the field size. It's just totally different. And racing with national talent. So we actually have really, really strong women regionally where I live. So I'm very lucky. There are, you know, some races I can go to Tulsa. I can go to Oklahoma City, sometimes even Kansas City and do some, you know, regional racing with some really strong women. But again, it's 12 people in the race. So the big difference for me is, you know, national racing, it's a bigger peloton, and it's, you know, national talent. So people that you don't necessarily know. So again, it's, you really have to use the race tactics that you learn on YouTube, right? You gotta, it's real racing versus, hey, I know these people and I've got, you know, specialized tactics with my small field and the women that I'm used to racing with, you know, year in and year out.
Yeah. Is it, do you feel that at your level to be competitive, like at Masters National Championships, do you need a team? And let's talk about the criterium in general.
Yeah.
Do you need a team to be competitive at in those fields?
They are typically more individual races because it's an age group. You know, most people aren't lucky enough to have a teammate with them in the race. And so the Masters Nationals for women is a little bit to me more like the small field, you know, individual tactics versus the team tactics that you need to execute at a national race. So for me, the larger national races that you can do okay individually, but you really need a team. For Masters Nationals, it's a little bit more of the individual tactics and a lot more of kind of the cat and mouse being played.
Yeah. Let's talk about Masters Nats this year. It was in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which I think is like 4,000 or 5,000 feet of elevation, roughly, right?
Yeah.
So that's tricky. So that's what, somewhere around like 1,500 meters, or about 1,200 meters, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. So that's tricky because you're now getting to the point where like elevation makes a difference. And where you're from in Fayetteville, you're not far off a sea level, right?
That's right. Yeah.
So let's talk first about that. What did you do for elevation leading into this? Did you do anything in fact for that?
No, I would love to go spend 2 weeks, you know, in the area and get acclimated, but I didn't have time to do that. So I did the old get there the day before. And the way that the schedule was, and it was like this, and of course, 2020 was canceled. 2019, it was like this too. We had the road race on Friday and the crit on Sunday. So for me, actually, road race is a little bit more suited to my strengths than crit racing. And so road race was my focus. And so we drove halfway 2 days before and then drove in the day before the race, the road race, which was on Friday. So we got there on Thursday, did the road race on Friday, placed fourth in that. And then Saturday was a rest day. And then the crit was on Sunday, and I felt it. Like I did not feel good in that race, which I think helped me, in a roundabout way, because it really made me have to change my tactics.
Yeah. So let's talk about the road race, first of all, since that was like, was that more of your goal than the crit? Was the crit kind of like a consolation prize? Like,
yeah, it's like, I'm in 10-1, I'm going to do the crit.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was your goal for the road race?
Honestly, the goal was to get a podium. I mean, that was the outcome goal, was would love to go, you know, do the road race and get on the podium there. The course was pretty challenging. It was shorter, so we only did one lap this year. So it was only like 35 miles, which is a pretty short race.
Wow, yeah.
But it was hot, and the fields that did two laps, I think that there was a lot of people that dropped out. So I'm not sure if that was a blessing or a curse doing the shorter course. But it was there were rollers, but then there was one hill, Heartbreak Hill. And it was like probably an 8 to 10 minute drag up to the hill. And the hill was pretty steep. And I don't remember average percent, but I want to say maybe like 12 or 14%. It was a tough.
Wow.
It was one where you're, well, for me, you know, just to turn the pedals over, you're over 300 watts at the steep bits of it.
Wow.
So that was the differentiator. Yeah, for sure. So that was the point where the break formed in the pack. And I was fifth up the climb. I knew I just needed to be careful. So I think I could have probably stayed a little further up, but I didn't want to blow everything out. It was a long enough climb that if I didn't climb within myself, I knew that I could probably ruin the rest of the race. So I just watched, you know, the race leaders go, and knew that I'd have some time to catch back on. So there was a long kind of rolling descent after that climb. So I got up to the top fifth. I was pretty close behind the girl that was in fourth. So caught her. We worked together to catch the girl in third. And then the three of us worked together to catch the two that were off the front. And from there, the five of us worked together really until the end of the race. The cat and mouse game started about 5K from the finish. And it's funny, it was a road race, but the way that the finish was, it was a 90 degree turn into a downhill to the finish line. Wow. And so it's almost like, even though it was a road race, you had to really, you had to be strong on your cornering and very courageous to take that last corner at speed into the finish. And so the girl that won, I think, is actually a pretty good crit racer. She's on the Tyrone team. From California. Maya is her name. She's awesome. So anyway, so the five of us worked together, and then it was just, you know, little cat and mouse till the end. And then I think I surged first, which I was kind of thinking, hey, if I could get a gap before that corner, whoever hit the corner first and came out of the corner first was the winner. So I kind of wish I timed that differently. But anyway, I surged first. And of course, some girls hopped on my wheel and came around me. And then I just held on for fourth.
Nice job. So were you satisfied with that performance finishing on fourth? I don't know if they did the long podium or did you want it? Were you one spot short? Did it light your fire?
I was okay with it. I was just glad to be able to catch back on to the lead group after the hill. I mean, it was a tough, tough, tough climb. My numbers were good. I felt like I performed to what I had. I felt good that day. So no, I was happy with it. I mean, awesome. Of course, like the timing and the the finish, you replay that a bunch, like, man, if I had done this, this could have happened. So I kind of wish I'd played the finish a little differently, but I felt good with outside that how I performed on the day.
So the next day being the crit, you didn't feel mm-hmm. great coming the next day, obviously after a hard race effort and up at elevation after traveling coming in. All of it's compounded to make you not feel great. And you mentioned that you had to change how you were planning on racing. So how were you planning on racing and how did you end up having to race that one?
Well, you know, it was a smaller field. And so the whole negative racing is really what I've dealt with a lot, or what we deal with a lot as women, is with the smaller field. And so I know you all have talked about negative racing a bunch on the podcast. I don't know if everyone knows what that is. And I've heard it described a couple of different ways, but to me, it's just, no, everyone is motivated to not let any one person get off the front. So you can throw punches, but you're going to get chased down. And so then people don't want to throw the punches, because why? So then it just becomes a slow race for the sprint. And then it just kind of comes down to the sprint. So anyway, you know, my options were this: do I want to try to animate the race and make some attacks and try to establish a break, or do I want to chase down attacks? And you know, I was thinking about the people in the race and who would I follow, who would be dangerous if they attacked. And I just didn't, like, I didn't feel horrible, but I just didn't feel good. I had a hard time catching my breath, like that feeling at elevation. It was day four at elevation, and I just didn't feel like I had a lot in my legs. And so as we started racing, I just knew, like, you got one or two good efforts, like, that's it. So you're going to have to be very, very conservative. And I do kind of, I like to, it's funner to have fun in the race, throw some attacks, chase down attacks. Being aggressive is more fun. That's generally what I like to do in a race like that. So it's a little uncharacteristic for me, but I was like, I did no work the entire race. And I knew who were the strong, you know, the people to watch out for in the race. And so who to follow if they attacked, that I needed to make sure I'm on their wheel. But then if someone attacked, it was really hard for me to not chase. So I let it go. And I just looked around and I would get on the wheel to follow, to chase down. And so I remember, I think it was two laps to go, maybe even three laps to go, a girl did get off the front. So she tagged very strong. I think she's a triathlete, so she's kind of got that diesel power. She got off the front and we just played cat and mouse for almost the rest of the race. So no one wanted to do the work to chase her down. Right. And in my mind there were, so she was off the front, obviously contender for the race, myself and two others were kind of in my mind, the other contenders. And so I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'm not chasing her down. And it was just cat and mouse. And to the point that the announcer was kind of starting to call it for her. And she wasn't that far off, maybe 10 seconds, 15 seconds off the front. So finally, like half a lap to go, one of the other women put a dig in to go get her. And I said, all right, here we go. I stayed on her wheel. And then, so there was a corner, the corner was probably 250 meters from the finish. And, the dig to catch her was going into that corner. And when I looked back, we had actually dropped, the fourth person. So it was just me and the girl doing the chasing. We rounded the corner and she actually made the catch. And from there, it was just a three person sprint. And I think because I had saved all that energy, I just had a decent little sprint and, you know, sprint and won. But it was pretty cool because the announcer was just like calling it for the girl off the front. And also didn't, you know, some of the other ladies in that race had won before, you know, he knew their names. Like he didn't know who I was.
That's
he
cool.
was like, there's another rider coming to the front. And I was surprised that watching the video after was pretty funny. But, you know, I certainly didn't expect to win. And I haven't won that many races. I'm pretty okay at getting on a podium, but there's that feeling when you're like, here's the line and you're like, just on, that's the best feeling in the world. When you're the first one coming up on that line and like it it's there, you know, there was no posting up. I don't even think I shook a fist until I was 100 meters past the finish. Like, I did that. Oh my God. Yeah. So anyway, it was super cool.
That I want to ask you a couple of questions about racing to win, be the first one across that line versus racing to be on the podium.
Yeah.
How do you think if you were to have two, you know, if you were to live in parallel universes and you obviously we satisfied this reality of you winning and we know how that race unfolded. Mm-hmm. How do you think the race would have unfolded if you had gotten a podium? Would it have been because you would have been a race animator?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think I'm pretty sure I could have gotten on the podium. But just the extreme, like I can't overemphasize how hard it is to let, like the thing I've heard said, and I agree with, in a negative race, you have to be willing to lose to win. And to me, that's two things. Either you're going to just even throw the attack, even though it's not the smartest thing and maybe it works, or you're going to play it really, really safe, which is what I did. And it is very, very hard to sit on the wheel and let something go and just know this is probably that I'm probably going to lose, but I'm not, if I do this work, I'm not going to win. So that's probably the most discipline and restraint I have ever used in a race. And, you know, the result was there. And I'm pretty sure the other girls were mad at me. Like I didn't know it worked.
Yes.
Well, that's but, just you know, there's like, always a little annoyance because I've been in the race where I'm like, man, we did all the work and so-and-so sat in the back the whole race. And, you know, then they win. And it's like, if you want to win, you kind of have to be willing to either have a lot of restraint or you just got to be really strong.
Yeah. Like imagine if we flipped that the other way and let's look at like, I mean, in American racing in particular right now, Legion seems unbeatable. Imagine if everybody criticized the Williams brothers of doing no work during the race, right?
Yeah.
Like they don't, you don't even think about it because they have that established pattern of winning and they have a team built for that. But even if you don't have a team built for that, you still have to race things intelligently with discipline and patience. And that's so hard. And that's what those Williams brothers and the rest of that team just do so well. Right. Yeah. So, and that's what you did so well at Masters National Champs is you knew that it's not up to you to win the race from laps, you know, 1 to 9 of 10. Instead it's to win the race on lap 10.
Right. Yeah.
That's and it's so hard. You're right. It's so, and did you do anything to like cope with yourself in those moments? Because it's like an internal battle where it's like, chase it down. Then you have pressure from other riders telling you to chase it something.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah.
What did you do to manage that?
Well, I think my body helped me because I also felt terrible. I mean, I was just like, I don't feel great. Like, I'm like, I've got one in me. That's what I've got. I'm going to use it at the right time. I think it's harder when your fitness is great. Like, cause that's when you're like, man, it's just so easy. I can follow that. It didn't even hurt. It felt great. I'm not even out of breath. And that's not how I felt, you know? And I've heard it said that sometimes you can have the best results even when your fitness isn't where you want it to be because you have to race so smart. And I think that this race was a good example of that. I was peaked and physically good, but it was just, I think day 4 at elevation. I don't know if it was, you know, the hard road race and then a day off. And then just for whatever reason on that day, I didn't have a lot.
Yeah.
So that made it easier, but yeah, it's tough.
It is hard, right? It's that discipline that I think the best racers build. The ones that win more races are more disciplined in almost every case. You know, there's always the odd flyer that sticks, right? But if you make your, and I say career loosely for all of us non-professionals here, but if you make your racing career set on those flyers, then you just have to adjust expectations because it's really just as risky, or it's just more risky than sitting back and maybe somebody's flyer sticks and maybe it doesn't. You're just on the other side of the coin, you know?
Yeah.
And it's hard because you want to use your fitness that you have too, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes I guess fatigue is a good thing.
Yeah.
Good sign. Well, this is awesome. Did you ever think that you would be a national champion?
No.
Has it sunk in yet that you are?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's very gratifying and certainly I've put in a lot of time and I've been consistent and you know, probably a lot of the feedback that I got, the congratulations were around that, like, well-deserved, you've worked hard. You know, anyone I've ever, all of my friends, my poor friends that aren't cyclists, they get no time. My friends that are cyclists see the work. And so, you know, I definitely put the work in. And then, you know, there's a little bit of the stars align and it all comes together. And certainly that played into it too. But, you know, who knows? Who knows if it'll ever happen again? But I'm just really, really proud of the accomplishment for this year.
Yeah, you should be. It's awesome, Jessica. Just, this is a cool story. And I'm super excited to hear, and I'm inspired to hear about a person that carries, that spins a lot of plates and still manages to do so well. You see, you inspire me, Jessica.
I appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Absolutely. You're feeling my hunger to still keep trying for that national championship. So,
yes, you should. You should. Yes. You're this close.
I know we're close. I actually get to, and this is a tease for an upcoming episode, but we'll be interviewing the guy that won my division at national championships because he used Trainer Road to do it. So
he used our own app
to beat me at national championships. So, but wouldn't have it any other way. So, but this is fantastic. And now if you're listening to this, I'd love to hear your story about how you've used Trainer Road to achieve any level of success. You do not have to win a Masters National Championship like Jessica here. It could be anything because we can all learn from different athletes that have just used Trainer Road to achieve something. And you can do so. Just go to trainerroad.com/SAP. I'd love to hear from all of you. And it's a free, safe place. You can share it no matter what. There's zero judgment. You can share whatever achievement you want, and we're happy to hear them. I also at times take the liberty of sharing those stories with the people in our company, and it just makes everybody feel so good to know that something great is being accomplished with all of our hard work here. So, please go to trainerroad.com/SAP and submit. And then hopefully we can have a podcast like here with Jessica. Jessica, you're part of the Breakaway team. Is there any other way that people can kind of follow you or get in touch with you?
Yep, absolutely. So Breakaway Cycling is my team. And then my personal Instagram is A Jessica Brooks. All one word, A Jessica Brooks.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks so much, Jessica. We will talk to you soon. Hopefully we'll see you at the next Premier Road race, whichever one we're at. That would be a blast to catch up.
Yes.
I've seen the Breakaway team that. Races. So it'd be cool.
Yeah. We've raced nationally for a while, a big junior team. And then new this year is a men's team, as well. So we're super excited.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, I appreciate you doing this. And once again, if you're listening to this, go to trainerroad.com to get faster like Jessica did. Maybe you can win a national championship. And also, if you want to be on the podcast, once again, trainerroad.com/SAP. Thanks a bunch, everybody. Talk to you next time.
Thanks.